This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Off we go out to the River Islands guest line. Time for Cleared to Play. Let's take you inside the tent, get you updated on the latest injuries in the Bay. Proud to partner with UCSF Health on this segment. Here's our friend, Professor of Orthopedic Surgery, Dr. Nirav Pandya. Hey, Doc, what's going on?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're great, man. And everybody wants to know what your thoughts are on Christian McCaffrey and whether or not he looks full speed and what he might be dealing with right now.
Yeah, I think he still doesn't necessarily look full speed, but what the good news is that there's no reports of him having soreness. There's no reports of him having to take a game off. So I look at this in kind of two lights. One is, there's the, are you going to aggravate your Achilles again? Is there something he's going to take another couple weeks off? And we haven't heard that. Then the second part of this is, it's probably going to take him some time to look and get back to that explosiveness that he had before, because he just simply took a long time off. And in order to be that explosive, there's a certain type of training you need to do over a long period of time to regain that. And you hear stories of how McCaffrey trains. He trains like a track athlete. You just can't do that when you have Achilles tendonitis. So I think this will evolve over the next couple of weeks where you start seeing him be more explosive. But yeah, he definitely does look a little bit slower than before. Now, maybe he doesn't have the biggest holes to run through, and that's part of it. But in general, I think it's not unexpected for him to be looking a little bit slower in his first two games back.
Yeah, considering most of those first two games are usually in the preseason, and that's ostensibly what he just went through. The real alarming one from the weekend is Nick Bosa with a strained oblique on the other side. Is this pretty common where you overcompensate for one oblique and then you strain the other one?
I think at that position, absolutely, that can happen. And where he plays, where he's constantly twisting, he's depending on his core a lot, you can get a lot of compensation because everything is just interconnected. I think the thing that's a little bit more concerning is that I think when he was at Ohio State, Bosa did have core muscle surgery on both sides. And the obliques are part of that core. And obviously, there are a lot of muscles that make up the core, and people can get surgery for different reasons. But you do worry when someone starts getting oblique abdominal issues, is this a reaggravation of what happened in the past? So something to watch closely. And anytime you have the core involved, whether you've had surgery or not in that area, it does impact your ability to keep your knees stable, to keep your ankle stable. So something that is a little bit more concerning based on the position that he plays and just how powerful he is, as opposed to someone who may be at the wide receiver or cornerback position.
Well, Doc, with what you viewed on TV, when you see someone's sort of lower half lock up like that and then walk off the field, were you surprised to hear Kyle Shanahan the following day say that they have not ruled Nick Bosa out for this weekend?
I'm a little bit surprised. I mean, I think that this isn't one of those injuries that you can be effective at that position. It's just so much of what he does is based on his ability to kind of get down low, contort his body in certain ways to get to the quarterback. So it might be a little bit of gamesmanship, and I am a little bit surprised. For Nick Bosa to pull himself out of a game definitely is, it has to be something pretty big. And yeah, we'll kind of see how it goes. But I would not be surprised if he does not play this weekend.
I meant to ask about the pain tolerance and the use of the needle on an oblique. Can Toradol be used for an injury like this?
It can be used for kind of general pain relief, you know, kind of getting it more systemically. But from a localized area, that oblique is so large. And, you know, sometimes it'll give you pain in the abdomen. And then the next day it'll be kind of pain shooting down your groin. It's a really hard area to kind of, quote unquote, numb up. But they can do general things to help with pain. But I think the important thing to understand is you need those obliques to be strong to be able to function. So even if you get the pain relief there, they're going to be injured. There's some tearing potentially there, so he won't be as impactful. So I think it's even with pain relief, it may not necessarily mean that he's going to be out on the field.
Doc, let's look at George Kittle. And the team said, quote, he was close, and then immediately said we expect him to practice on Wednesday. We talk about hamstrings a lot and the possibility of re-injury, but what's your take based on what we know with George?
You know, it's interesting. They called it hamstring irritation, which makes me think this was more kind of like muscle soreness, not necessarily, kind of a strain or some sort of structural issue. So I think in general, at this point in the season, if an athlete's having some soreness, you just worry about if there's secondary compensation happening elsewhere. Because he was close, the fact that actually we're going to let him test it out makes me indicate that this is more kind of more general fatigue, more wear and tear that's kind of built up over the season as opposed to a structural injury. And the fact that they were so quick to say, hey, he's going to practice on Wednesday, I'm a little bit less concerned for him. And the fact that he's had these issues in the past, he knows his body well and knows what's more serious and what may just simply be soreness from, you know, several games into the season.
Yeah, hopefully he's ready to go at Lambeau. Mark and I were both saying we can't imagine him not being out there on the somewhat frozen tundra at Lambeau. I want to ask about Steph and knee bursitis. Is this just simple inflammation for Steph?
Yeah, I think it was back in March. He kind of had a similar thing, last season. In general, where you get knee bursitis, it's whenever you have kind of repetitive impacts or falls, and that kind of bursa, which is kind of like a cushion around your knee, will get irritated. So just the amount of falling he does, whether he's going into the lane or shooting threes, it's not surprising that this is something that will pop up every now and then. Even I think Steve Kerr was even said, I didn't even know he had it. So I think it's just garden variety stuff. You get worried about it when it's more potentially in a football player or someone who's doing much more contact, where you can get so much more force that causes that burst to become really inflamed and irritated. But for a basketball player at his size, I think it's one of those things that every now and then it may act up, may miss a game here and there, but nothing to be concerned about.
Okay, Doc, great stuff. We appreciate you as always, man.
No problem. Take care, guys.
Okay, Doc Pandya with us, and the proceeding was sponsored by UCSF Health. If I were a betting man, and I don't like to bet on injuries.
Right.
But I would think that George Kittle will play. I would think that Christian McCaffrey is starting to look pretty much like himself, and I would expect Nick Bosa to be out and the 49er pass rush to be very, very challenged this weekend against Jordan Love.
Agreed, and the other one, which we didn't ask the doc about, is Trent Williams, who actually did get a toward-all shot during the game or at halftime or whatever, and so once that started wearing off, he started limping late in the game, and I think Trent's going to play, but for Trent, it's going to be a pain management thing throughout the remainder of the season, for sure.
888-957-957. Do we have Grandy's grades around the corner still? We haven't done that yet. That should be interesting. And then we got Steve Kerr coming up in less than an hour here on Willard and Dibbs. But let's keep going with y'all. Ian in Golden Gate Park. Hey, Ian, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, what's up?
The conversation earlier about I don't mean to bring it. Well, Shanahan, I think the main thing is the Debo sweep. I think that one needs to be scrapped. And one of the other guys was talking about how he didn't like him as a head coach. And I feel like maybe it could be time for him to bring in someone to help him with play calling. But I'm sure he does a lot of, you know, communal things with his play calling. But, yeah, the Debo sweep's got to go.
Ian, thanks. For me, jury is still out. I'm still trying to figure out. I know that it's a popular thing suddenly this week to be like, oh, Debo's aging. And maybe, slash even probably, I mean, everybody's aging. You know what I mean? Like, is he really, really fallen off of a cliff? Or is this just another thing that sort of fits into the puzzle of whatever it is that's just not working right now for the 49ers? Because he's not the only one. He's not the only one that suddenly looks different. You know what I mean? Like, Ayuk looked different when he was playing. Christian looks kind of different. I guess George doesn't look different. Juwan looks better. Brock also. Brock does not look quite as effective. To me, there's a push-pull between the individual and the collective when we're looking at the effectiveness of Debo Samuel.
Yes, and I do think watching every single game two or three times, I'm not seeing Debo make the explosive play very often, if at all. And I look at the Minnesota game, he had 8 catches for 110, and outside of that, he had 5 against Tampa for 62, 3 for 102 the first time against Seattle. That was a game where he had the one big explosive play, Debo down the sideline, but otherwise, he's been mostly bottled up. And I don't think the jet sweep is working anymore, because I don't believe that he has that speed necessary to get around that corner. It's no longer a surprise play. Every team runs it. You watch as much football as anybody this side of Kurt Warner, who I found out last night watches every snap from every team and every game, which I thought was pretty cool.
You want to talk about boring. I mean, that means the Jaguars.
Oh, he watches it all.
All of them. The Patriots.
Yeah, hopefully we can get Kurt on again to talk about, you know, not every snap, but Niner snaps. I don't think that Debo has the speed to run that play anymore, and that play is no longer a surprise. Everybody runs it now.
There's a couple things, and again, I'm no play calling expert, but that the difference between the jet sweep and what is often kind of called a bubble screen, like I know a lot of the bubble screens now, the defensive line, Nick Bosa picked one off earlier this year. They know, and they get out there and they get in the way. And so they've kind of changed from a safe play to now a really dangerous play, because it can turn into a pick six, like in a heartbeat. But did you watch the opening play, Texans and Cowboys last night?
Yeah.
Now, flag was
to
thrown,
the house.
But it was Nico Collins, and it was literally just whoop, like snap, turn, throw, bubble screen, Nico's gone. And it's the same play that Debo took to the house in Philly last year. And I haven't seen that play this year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because defensive ends are really taking that out of the Niners' playbook, or if, I don't know what, but it seems like an effective way to get the ball to Debo outside quicker than the jet sweep.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, the other piece of that is Isaac Garendo, who's got the 4.33 speed, and you and I had a debate about a month ago about, you know, Garendo, and me saying, can you just like line him up and use the speed? And you were saying that, you know, you can't just throw a guy out there and expect him to do something in that moment. Well, here we are now, week 11 or week 12, I apologize. And now's a time where you need to start seeing some things from some other people. And if he has that speed, maybe you jet sweep him and you get him into space and let him be a guy to get to the corner, because I just don't see Debo having that burst that he normally does.
Valvoline Instant Oil Change, your 15-minute drive-through oil change. Visit their expert technicians to check fluids, tire pressure, windshield wipers, batteries, and more. Safe holiday travels start at Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Locations and coupons at BayAreaOilChange.com. That's BayAreaOilChange.com. More of your calls, Grandy's Grades, coming up next. Steve Kerr in less than an hour on Willard and Dibbs.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Bay Area, it's Steve Kerr. You're listening to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. You know what, Dibs? I like your picks.
Yeah, coach, let's go! I'm 2 wins away from being hot.
I don't like that.
I know you don't.
I don't like that. You don't deserve that.
I do, coming off a Monday night win. I'm Mr. Monday Night.
Don't be a prisoner of the moment.
I will, coming off a win.
Your picks are not good this year.
I'm just a game below 500.
Listen to how frustrated people are with the Niners. Their record's better than yours.
That's fair. Okay. I've had a lot more games than them.
You have.
I think I'm 15 and 16 or 16 and 17 or 17
don't
and 18.
Stop victory lapping.
You're 17 and 18.
There it is. I knew
victory,
I'd get there.
17 there and 18. Well, I mean, what are we celebrating in this world?
We're celebrating.
17. What, you sound like these people who want a cookie for tying a youth soccer game or something like
but
that.
But what you do, Mark, on this very show is on a Monday,
I'm gonna eat it.
The Niners win. It's a victory Monday. Mm-hmm. So today it's a victory Tuesday. And no man should put that asunder. I'm coming off a win.
Coming off a win. Yeah.
And that, I would like to say it was an Ottoman game.
If the Niners, this is what, here's how I would look at it. Let's say the Niners lose in Green Bay, and then they lose in Buffalo.
Right.
Now, the week after that, who do they play? Is that the Chicago game?
Chicago, yeah. Right.
So then they come home, and they beat the stupid Bears.
Yeah, yeah.
And show up the following day 6-7.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us are like, woo, Niners are hot. Looking good, boys.
It's a victory Monday.
That ain't how it's going to sound.
Well, it'll sound.
That ain't how it's going to sound, Dibs.
It'll be a victory Monday. And if you don't want to acknowledge the difficulty in winning an NFL game, then that's a you problem.
Oh, God.
I understand.
Oh, God.
I understand how hard it is to win in this league, in the National Football League. And you know what? If you're 5-7 and all of you dunderheaded, imbecile talking heads are going to talk about, that's a must win. And it probably won't be, because you can go 5-7 and you're allowed to win five in a row and be 10-7.
You still fail to capture the essence of what people mean by must.
Well, say what you mean.
I think we are. You don't want to hear
it. Say what you do.
Stand on what you say.
Thank you.
Stand on what you do.
Jerry Rice called it a must win. Yeah. The Green Bay game yesterday.
Right. Yeah, and that's, he's entitled to say whatever he wants. Mm. Shout out the First Amendment. He's wrong. And if all of you people want to use that phrase and use it incorrectly, I can't stop you.
It's not incorrect. It takes the follow-up sentence. You always take it to mean must win or you're eliminated.
That's essence of what it means.
No.
Well, then what does it mean?
They must win or they're in terribly bad shape.
Ooh, a chilling take.
Well,
we can say that about any game.
No, you can't.
No, you can't. Yes, you can.
When the Niners were 5-0, was it like, oh, crap, they fell to 5-1, we're good?
No, you don't.
No, you don't. No, but I would argue that the game last Sunday was a must win.
That's a big game.
Yeah.
It's a big game, and you lost it.
They are now in crap city. They are in really, really hot water.
They're not in crap city.
They are.
But they are shopping for homes in crap city.
Their playoff analytics are below 50%, and they're the flipping Niners.
Yeah, that doesn't put you in crap city.
I believe it is.
The Jets are in crap city.
Listen to...
Fired the coach, 40-year-old broken QB, and the GM who lost his job today. That's crap city.
If that's your bar, that's not my bar for the Niners. Listen to our listeners. This whole station has been a steady flow for about 70 hours of people who are absolutely fed up, livid, done, frustrated by what's happened with the Niners. They're not in good shape just because the math is still there.
And we're not to the math is there portion of it yet. If you are a fan who is giving up, and we've gotten a lot of it.
No one's saying that.
A lot of fans have given up. A lot of fans, we had a guy call yesterday. Oh, I haven't watched now in a month. That's a fan who's given up. And other people on Twitter, I won't watch this anymore.
Do what you
want. That's giving up. Yeah. And for me, even if you're 5-7, you're not in a spot where it's win or else. It's pretty important. Every loss you have, the next game becomes more important.
At a certain point, we could walk down the road of like, well, it's just a game. So like,
of course,
you don't. It's not.
But
like
this
anybody,
is all in the context of playoffs or not playoffs.
So in the context,
it's not life or death.
In context of playoffs or not playoffs, I think it's fair to be like, they must win this, or else things start looking like a very, very high staircase to climb. And I would argue they're already there.
Right.
They're already there. Like, to me, here's something I'll say is a must. You must either beat Green Bay, Buffalo, or Detroit. Or you're dead. You're not going to the playoffs. And the math supports me. Because if you don't win one of those games, the best you could do is go 9-8. And that ain't going to be good enough. So, now, you can't prove what I'm saying through, like, a math equation. Because I don't know. Maybe the Cardinals will never win another game again. Maybe the whole NFC West is just going to fall apart, and 9-8 will be good enough.
And maybe you beat the Packers in Buffalo, and Arizona doesn't lose, and you don't beat anybody else.
Right, but the premise of what I'm saying is that you have to win. Like, I think you got to go at least 5-2 the rest of the way. Therefore, you must either beat Green Bay, Buffalo, or Detroit, and that's really hard. The team we're watching right now has not shown that they can do something like that.
Well, this team has not shown it can beat Seattle or the Rams or Arizona. So, yeah, if you want to look at what we've seen from this team.
They have shown that they can beat Seattle. But
right,
yeah.
They split with Seattle, so you're 1-3 in the division. And if you want to talk about this team, then we're not even talking about must wins, because this team that we've seen won't beat Buffalo, Green Bay, or Detroit. And they'll struggle with Chicago and Miami.
But it's the NFL.
Exactly.
And stuff surprises us every single week.
Yep.
I mean,
this team is not surprised. It's disappointed.
Yeah. But I mean, again, what I'm saying is you could, well, the team we've watched 10 weeks in a row, there's no way they can beat Green Bay. The Raiders went into Baltimore and won a football game.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell is going to happen next.
You never know.
But I'd argue they must win one of those games. That's all. It's just a, like, you got to leave a little room for the emotion of all this, don't you think?
Sure. But okay. You also have to allow people to respect the English language at a higher level. And if Jerry Rice, the GOAT of playing football, wants to call it a must-win, he's allowed to. Yeah. I disagree with him because it really isn't a must-win. Because if they lose to Green Bay, they're not gonna bubble wrap everyone and just shut it down.
We'll do grades in a sec. It sounds like Javier in Vacaville has given up. Hi, Javier. Thank you for calling.
Hello. How you guys doing today, Mr. Willard and Mr. Dibley?
Oh, hey, Dan Dibley.
I'm sorry to break it to you, Mr. Dibley, and this is no shade on you, and you're probably going to ring them up, but you have this muscle. It's not over if they lose. Yo, in any locker room that I've been a part of, collegially or high school-wise, when you have this sort of dismay of a projected season of Super Bowl or bust and they're losing games at this rate, not in the amount, but in the way they're losing, yo, if they don't lose this game that they just lost, we're talking about something completely different. If they go into Buffalo and Green Bay and lose those games, what Jerry Rice means is it's not a must-win game. It's a must-win if you want to get to your ultimate goal. They're not going to have any this whole, like, it's not over. Because there's a thing in the locker room called morale. There's a thing that they call confidence, momentum. That's real in sports, professionally, collegially, high school-wise. If you lose games like this, and then you go to the eastern part of the seaboard in the United States, and you lose to teams that are potential playoff opponents that you beat last year, and you're getting thrashed away without boasting and without whatever McCaffrey to shove himself, you know, the season is, this is going to be like a gap year if they don't get this right. But what I'm saying, it's over. When I told the screener, I said it's over of this season. No matter what happens, they're not fit to compete for what we think they should have in August. And it's not about the players. Sorensen's not ready. Because how many times have we seen a defense, for us, give up a drive to end a game and lose? Shanahan has not made adjustments to counter defenses, adjustments to what they do schematically. And I want to have a question, and I know people think, oh, this is ridiculous. But I've said this since day one, since you guys have been on the air, and I appreciate your show since I started listening when I was 24, my senior season at California University 7 years ago. And it's showing now. How many of you would be – it's not going to happen – but how many of you would swap Jim Harbaugh for Kyle Shanahan right now? Because I would pay any amount to have it happen. And it's not because of what he has or has not done, but look what he's doing in San Diego, or rather Los Angeles. They are a team to be reckoned with, and it's overnight. We are a team with talent that looks like we're lost, a broken team. And if I'm wrong, gentlemen, please let me know. But if they don't win in Green Bay, Buffalo, the season is done. I think it's done now. They need to rep all the young guys. Mason, Howie, everybody else needs to get good ample reps. But they can keep playing these guys and see what happens. But in the day, this is like a gap year. They got a lot of things they got to figure out in the offseason.
Yeah, it may well end up that way. That's certainly the favorite right now if you were handicapping the thing in terms of whether or not this team is capable of doing things in January. I've just also watched teams in sports that sort of develop late. You know what I mean? It's kind of like that ugly kid in high school, and then you see him again when he's 35, and like, damn, when the hell did you get tall and good-looking? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that happens in sports. The most famous one in recent years, I think, was it 50 games in that the Washington Nationals, this is the year they won the World Series. I think 50 games in, they had 19 wins. They're terrible. They're terrible for a solid third of the season. Then they won the whole thing. Like, sometimes it turns on, and this is certainly a group where you're going to at least leave a little space for that, especially when you're literally a game out of first place in your division.
Yep,
so,
agreed.
So too early for all of that talk for me. As far as the Harbaugh thing with Shanahan, you brought this up before the show, and I do think that there's an interesting thing that I noticed. It's just a dynamic, if you will. The one thing that I hear people scream about with Kyle Shanahan is also true for Harbaugh. But you don't want to talk about it there. Jim Harbaugh also went to a Super Bowl, also had all kinds of opportunities in the red zone, blah, blah, blah. didn't win the football game.
Give it to Frank Gore.
And the difference, but thank you, and the difference between Harbaugh and Kyle is that Harbaugh wears everybody the bleep out. And Kyle doesn't. Kyle has shown himself to be much more sustainable. And this idea that, oh, well, Harbaugh comes into programs and turns them over overnight. What the hell did Kyle do?
It wasn't overnight.
Pretty much.
Well, they lost their first 10 games.
Understood. But
Harbaugh
then
went 13-3 his first year.
Okay, and Harbaugh, as he does right now, is also looking for situations where he can walk in and the quarterback already exists. Kyle Shanahan.
And Alex Smith.
That's a pretty good quarterback.
And he turned Colin Kaepernick into a good quarterback.
Pretty good quarterback. I don't know if he turned Colin Kaepernick into a pretty good quarterback.
Well, if we give Kyle credit for Brock, then we give Jim credit for Colin.
But we give Kyle, like, what would Jim Harbaugh do with Jimmy Garoppolo? How about that?
He probably would bench him.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, anyway.
Harbaugh went 44-19 in 4 years.
Anybody who wants to come on here and dismiss what Kyle built, along with John, who, by the way, was selected by Kyle, and, like, I'm going to disagree with you.
It's not dismissive, and I'm not with Javier and Vacaville.
Yeah, you're not doing that.
I would not give up Kyle for Harbaugh, but what I said in our thread, and nobody answered, and although I think Grandy might have been
pretty,
like, wow.
It's pretty close to showtime.
I was
getting food.
Anyhow, I'm not judging you guys for your silence. I was trying to think of things that were touching me and hitting me, and the one question I had is, who wins the Super Bowl first, Jim Harbaugh or Kyle Shanahan? And right now, and Jim Harbaugh is a five-year guy.
When you look at the Niners receivers between Juwan Jennings and...
Well, Jim Harbaugh is normally a five-year guy.
Yep.
He was four with the Niners. He was about seven in Michigan. He was about five at Stanford. It's what he does. So in the next 5 years, is Jim going to get one or is Kyle going to get one?
I'd argue the likelihood is neither of them.
So if neither of them gets one in 5 years.
Jim Harbaugh is not getting away from Patrick Mahomes anytime soon.
Well, Jim is 61 years old.
Yeah.
So Jim's not going to have the longevity that Kyle is. But I look at the next 5 years, and the Chargers this year are more likely to be a playoff team than the Niners.
That's true.
As it sits right now.
But I would answer Kyle due to the fact that Jim Harbaugh is in a division with Patrick Mahomes and no other reason.
Well, he may not have to play Mahomes. You know,
no, but somebody's going to have to win. You know what I mean? He's got a much harder conference than Kyle
does. Absolutely. You've got Baltimore, Buffalo, and Kansas City.
Grab this text, 512. Harbaugh's a winner. He's won big games before. He's never failed like this with overwhelming talent. It's so amazing how we change history. First of all, Grandy, what's Kyle's playoff record? I believe, what do we got? 8-4?
He's been to four playoffs and he's won two games each time.
Okay.
That's correct.
8-4. All right. So remember now, Kyle's never won big games. Secondly, ask anybody with Michigan for a solid 4-year run if Jim Harbaugh was a quote winner, because Ohio State was sitting on his face for about four straight years and people had it until he finally had one team breakthrough, one team in a 5-year run, and then deuces left. I'm not telling you Harbaugh's
left the program in shambles and in shame.
I'm not telling you Harbaugh's not a winner. I'm telling you they both are.
Harbaugh 5-3 in the playoffs in the NFL.
They're both very good coaches. They both know how to build a program and get their guys to go out there and play.
I just thought it was a fascinating question as to who gets one first, because Kyle is probably going to get, you would imagine, 3 to 5 more years here. Unless it's a complete catastrophe, and it hasn't been.
Or a lot more.
And Harbaugh normally gets, you know, 4 or 5 years in a stint, and he's got this thing going in the right direction. And I know you got Mahomes and Allen and Burrow and Lamar and all the rest of it in the AFC, but Harbaugh's building a team that is different than those other teams, and he's building a team that, you know, has a chance to win in the playoffs.
You want to do grades?
Do we have time?
Of course we do.
Let's do it.
Let's do Grandy's grades.
How did the 49ers grade out this week? Did they pass? Did they fail? Let's find out. It's time for Grandy's Grades on Willard and Dibbs.
All right, as always, Grandy's Grades after a week at Niners football. Week 11 in Santa Clara, the Seahawks 20, Niners 17. We begin, as we always do, with the quarterback position. That was Brock Purdy, as always, this week. I gave Brock Purdy a C-. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't all that impressive either. The interception was bad. There were some nice throws. The Juwan Jennings plays were obviously very nice. You guys have pointed out the Debo miss in the fourth quarter on 2nd and 11. That was a really bad one. 21 for 28, completion.
receptions. And a lot of those were just easy over the middle to McCaffrey, to Debo in the flat, all of that. I wasn't that impressed. A C-minus for Brock Purdy.
C-plus for me, and I would just add in the pylon run, Purdy to the pylon for the touchdown, and a couple of other scrambles. The big ones were the throw to McCaffrey, the force INT, and Mark mentioned it on Monday, the second and 11 play action. Debo's just open, and that's the throw that might ice the game, but in general, he was all right. I gave him a C+.
Yeah, I actually go even higher. I go B-. There's really only two throws that bother me. They both bother me a lot. But the 26 other throws didn't bother me. The two throws are the overthrow of Debo and the interception. But don't forget the scramble that had the pump fake also.
Oh, yeah.
The pump fake for the first down. Look, if we're going to sit here and admit, based on video, that very, very little was open, he didn't have a lot of time, receivers aren't open, it was not a great game for Brock. But and don't forget this also. How often was it first and 20, second and 15? That totally robs a quarterback of their ability to go out there and be aggressive because of all of those offensive line penalties. So not a great game for Brock, but I also thought there were a lot of other places to look first. So B- for me.
Up next, skill positions. That's wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs. Obviously, no Kittle today. That was, or this week, that was a big minus for the 49ers. Juwan Jennings was amazing in this game. McCaffrey was all right, nothing special, but he wasn't bad by any stretch. But you got nothing from basically everybody else. Skill positions, a C for me. Juwan Jennings carries that group. McCaffrey was all right. Everybody else, you got absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I that feels about right. Maybe even a C+, because I didn't see anything that was like offensive. There weren't like fumbles, but you know, there was the Juwan Jennings. I think also brings it up because he was restaurant quality in this game. But as we've talked a lot about, CMC was underwhelming. Debo Samuel was very underwhelming. Ricky Pearsall didn't really get involved. There's no Kittle in the game. So yeah, nothing stands out as great either. But Juwan Jennings for me is enough to make it a C+.
That's what makes it a B- for me. You guys really encapsulated it well. Juwan was so great again and dragging three and four guys, converting third downs. And McCaffrey was fine. No Pearsall is going to be blamed on another category coming up.
Yes, true. Good point. offensive line is up next. I'll keep this one short and sweet.
Oh, boy.
D+ for the O-line. McKivitt's penalties. Brendel was very bad once again. D+. They were very bad throughout this entire game.
Yeah, D+. And you weren't able to rush it effectively. Purdy scrambling for his life. And the line of scrimmage was never getting to the second level on run plays. It was staying at the line of scrimmage. D+ is where I had it.
I don't even know where you guys are getting your plus. What the hell did they... Like, I'm not going to give them an F because failing means essentially you almost didn't even show up to the football game. But what the hell did they get? What did they do well? Give me one thing that the offensive line did really well in this game.
Apuni was pretty good, and Trent Williams was good, not right up to his normal standard.
I'm looking at it as a collective.
Yeah.
The collective, you didn't run the ball well, you didn't protect well, and you made buckets of penalties.
Yeah.
You get a D.
There you go.
Fair enough. Up next is the front seven. As we go over to the defense, this is the down defensive lineman and the linebackers. I honestly was pleasantly surprised and impressed by the performance of the D-line. A B- overall for the front seven. I thought Bosa was very good when he was available. I also thought it was the best game for Leonard Floyd. He was the only guy getting pressure on Geno Smith once Bosa went down. I gave that group for their efforts a B-.
Don't leave out D. Winters, too. I thought he had maybe one of his best games as a young pro, and so I actually would bump it up even a little bit more because I'm going to give a nod to the fact that it didn't really go bad until Nick left. And I, you know, like, you got to acknowledge that. Like, your linchpin was out of the football game. So I'll go more like B+, because they were running this game. They were going to pull a close win out for the 49ers until Nick Bosa left.
Yeah, three names, one sack, Yetur Gross-Matos, or Gross-Matos.
Gross-Matos.
As some would call him.
Yeah.
I thought that he played a really good game. Broke down a little bit late. And Devondre Campbell, good early. And again, on that last drive, made a couple of critical mistakes. I have it as a solid B, though.
Not bad. Secondary is up next. Obviously, this has been a group that's been very young of late. without Mooney Ward. I gave that group a C+. You had an interception, but Jaxon Smith and Jigba killed you underneath all game long. Maybe this is more schematic than player-based, but a C+ for the secondary.
Flat C for me, and the interception, Yadam is like, oh, thank you. Throw it to me 15 yards overthrown, but yep. You're right, Grandy. Jaxon Smith and Jigba on that last drive. There was too much playing 8 yards off, too many guys breaking open, and other than the gimme pick, they only had two other passes defensed on the entire game.
Yeah, I mean, good game for Lenore. Green had to leave for a second before he came back in. We know that Mooney Ward, who, by the way, was back in the facility today, which is great to hear, but we know he was out. I'm with you that the Yadam interception was just kind of a lucky spot for him to be, and he wasn't very good in some of the other spots, but overall, not the spot where I would point the loss, so I'll go C+ for them.
Up next is special teams. Jake Moody made all of his kicks in this game. That's a major plus, but you also muffed a kickoff return. It did not turn into a turnover, luckily, and you also committed a really bad mistake by punting the ball into the end zone when Seattle had no one back late in the game that made the game-winning touchdown drive that much easier. Because they didn't really give up points immediately off of special teams, it's not terrible. A C for me, but still, they're not making much progress.
I'm going A+ for the special teams because this is the first time that they didn't make me throw my remote control off my balcony.
And remotes are hard to replace.
Yeah.
A C+, and I do look at the opening kickoff of the second half. They actually bounced one. They kicked it short of the goal line and made it a little bit more difficult. Garrendo had a couple of good kick returns in the game, so they're starting to show some signs there. And the muff punt, while hilarious and not damaging, it was yet another case of just catch the ball, C+.
Yes, fair enough. And last but not least, it is coaching. You guys have been talking about this for the last 2 days. I don't need to add on that much. It's the same story all year long. No progress. They get an F from me.
Oh. It's a D. Yeah, that's Lucas in the background.
Lucas just fell off of his chair.
He did a guru in the back. I added a D.
Okay.
Defensive coordinator that doesn't blitz. Head coach blows two challenges. And I know you were almost out of time at the end of the game, but it would have been nice to have a timeout there. But you challenged twice, and you lost them both. So just not a real good performance from the coaches.
Once again. An F is for people who barely show up. So Kyle and his mullet, they were there. But yes, a frustrating lack of adjustments, a frustrating lack of Jordan Mason. All of the frustration is there, and he's at the top. So yeah, I'm with you with a D for the coaching staff.
Man, Grandy, come dropping the hammer on Shanahan.
Yeah, he mad. Well, he started the whole week with text. He's like, all right, where do you focus? Give me one answer. And I was like, I kind of paused because I was driving and you answered. Yeah. And I forget exactly what you said, but you had a couple of nuanced things.
Yep.
And then I finally got to where I was going. And I'm like, it's Kyle Shanahan. And he's like, that is a correct answer.
You could tell.
So I knew he was getting an F. I knew he was getting an F. All right. We got a lot of you all lined up. So Tom and Oscar and Skills and D, stay right where you are, 888-957-9570. We've got that Draymond sound that you have got to hear, and Steve Kerr in 18 minutes. So don't you move, okay? We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. This is Willard and Dibs.
Bay Area, it's Lindy Waters. Catch my head coach Steve Kerr with Willard and Dibs each and every week right here on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, Lindy. No, he's not coming for me.
I didn't know.
I don't know.
I don't know if we've heard Lindy before. Is it the first time you played the Lindy?
Yeah.
That sounds right.
No, yeah. Okay, Lindy.
Do your thing, Lindy. Looked good last night.
He's a good player.
He wasn't the one throwing the ball all over the place.
No.
That was Draymond Green.
It was Day-Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I said this at the end of the game, too, on Twitter. Look, the Warriors didn't play well, but good Lord, I love this team.
Pretty fun.
Like that was some fight at the end.
You got to go out there and fight.
You got to go out there and be tough.
Yeah.
Like they just kept. It was clearly a game. It was a game they were going to lose. Like the whole night, it sort of felt that way. and they just kept scratching and clawing.
You got to go out there and be tough!
Thank you, and for them to get to the end and even just have one, just release it, let it fly! No, you hit the back iron, okay.
We're warriors!
That never gets old.
It's the best. But yeah, like I...
Down nine with 3.5 to go.
Really good, man. Really good. You didn't have your good stuff. You messed around. You turned it over. You can't make a free throw. Good Lord, Bill Walton's turning over in his grave. Like, somebody make a free throw, please. But, man, they fought. They fought and hung in and kept coming and kept coming. Their defense down the stretch kept getting stops at the right time. So, yeah, I just love it. I love the way this team plays right now.
Yeah, competitive, and even in a loss last night, you look at the way they went about coming back and fighting to come back, and you had two looks at it. You had one of those Steph shots where it's like, no way, and then you realize he makes these all the time.
And it was out.
And then Draymond with a great save, and the ball's loose, and a couple of passes, and Steph made the right play. You're covered. You kick it over to GP2 with a very clean look to tie it.
He had every chance to make that, you know? I mean, at that point... When you're down to a buzzer situation, you take an open look. Take an open look, it didn't go in. Didn't go in. I think there are some questions, like the question that we keep asking, we're going to keep coming back to it. You have games like that, and you start thinking about, this team's good, but are they good enough? You know, do they really have that pop and pizzazz? And I do think that we'll get to some questions at some point this year, if this keeps coming up. We're going to get to some questions about, hey, in the offseason, you guys sort of made it sound like Brandon Pajemski was untouchable and that's what the league was going to demand if you want to get a good player in return. I would argue so far Brandon Pajemski does not look like an untouchable player.
No.
So far this year.
No, 0 for 4 last night and 1 for 3 from the line. That to me speaks to... Oof. Maybe a confidence that's not all the way where it should be because the mask is off. The mask is off. And yet, and now the shooting should get better, right? Because he can see clearly and all the rest of it, but he's off to a slow start, to put it lightly.
Very much so. And probably getting fewer minutes than he was expecting.
Yep.
So anyway, Steve Kerr in less than 10 minutes will play the Draymond for you. He has a really interesting story about, remember that game? It was almost a couple weeks ago now, Boston, when Steve Kerr, like, unloaded on Steph. And everyone was like, whoa. Now, Draymond has an interesting story about that. We'll play it for you in just a few minutes. But we'll get some more people that want to talk Niners. Tom in Morgan Hill. Hi, Tom. What's going on?
What up, Willard? What up, Div? Thanks for taking my call. How you guys doing?
What's up?
Good, Tom.
Good.
Good. I'm not the most articulate, but I'll try my best here. I got no football experience, so I could be way off base here, but I was in the Marine Corps, so, you know, I've had some experience leading men, and if I had 30 seconds with Shanny, it'd probably be longer than 30 seconds because I'm not articulate, like I said, but I'd say, hey, bro, you need to pull your eye out of the scope. You're getting too caught up swinging rounds downfield that you can't see what the enemy is doing behind enemy lines downfield. So... You know, maybe if you want to translate that to a football sense, it's like, dude, your eyes are so glued to your playbook that you're so in love with your play calls that everyone calls you, you know, the genius and everything, that I just feel like you need to kind of take a step back, zoom out, get a picture of the whole game as a whole. And I mean, obviously a head coach should be doing that. I'm sure if I said this to him, he'd be like, yeah, I know. But he just needs to delegate a little bit more and have more trust in his assistant coaches. And, you know, maybe calling some plays and also embrace a little bit more like decentralized command, like the whole thing with Purdy not being able to call audibles on the line and everything. It's just like, dude, you need to trust your players to be able to be like, hey, I see this picture downfield, so I'm going to do this and maneuver this way. But it's just, it seems like he's so in love with his plan that he's blind to everything else.
It's an interesting take. Tom, thank you for your service, by the way, first and foremost. And then thank you for this call, second. And it's an interesting point. I mean, look, all of what he's saying is wrapped up in what I think all of us are agreeing on, which is that, like, whatever adjustments need to be made, they're not being made. They've not been made yet. Now, is he too married to his plan? I don't think that Kyle is literally just like not paying attention to the defense. I think that he is trying to devise a plan to beat specific defense, and there's predictions that are going on. He's like, I think they're going to do this, but maybe they do that. Maybe they're disguising well. I don't think he's not paying attention to the defense, but I understand why it feels that way. It feels like you're so married to something, because it does, again, to the layperson, it looks like we're seeing a lot of the same play calls, and they used to work, and now they're not.
Right, and they aren't working now because the players aren't executing, and I do think part of it is that the defense is used to seeing these plays, and they know what to expect from it. And it's not as easy as Kyle needs to bring in a new play caller, because Kyle's never going to bring in, I don't think, somebody to call plays for him.
Agreed.
It's what he thinks that he does the best at, and I think most people would agree with him. I do wonder about him adding people to the staff who can advise him on other things that maybe go missing, whether it's clock management or time management or challenges or other things that are game flow related. And going back to the Seattle game, opening drive of the ball game, 4th and 1 at your own 35, and you punt. Is that a time where maybe you get aggressive on 4th and 1? Do you have a 4th and 1 play that you want to execute and keep the ball moving?
I don't know, man. The whole 4th and 1 thing, I tell you what, I gave Jim Harbaugh, while his name comes up, I gave him a nod the other night on Sunday night during Sunday Night Football for something that very few coaches will do anymore. You get to 4th and 1, and I think as fans, we just have this concept of like, dude, you should be able to get a yard. Well, Seattle went on 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1.
Yeah, fourth and inches.
And could not get it. And I'm watching teams repeatedly on 4th and 1 not convert right now. Now, the Chargers, in a situation where they were headed for half and they were already up 21-6, they threw no timeouts and they threw a ball into the end zone. Had to be in the end zone because they've got no timeouts. And they got a pass interference called. And so with like 1 second left to go, or 3 seconds left to go, the Chargers got the ball down at the 1. Now, you have one play. Do you want to go for it? Harbaugh didn't even blink. He sent Dicker, the kicker, out there and kicked that field goal. And guess what? Good thing he had those 3 points, because that game was tied, as it turned out, with a minute to go, and then the Chargers ended up winning the football game. I think there are more. I'm not saying this is exactly the point with the Niners all the time, but I just reject this idea that because it's 4th and 1, you should always go for it.
Yeah, I'm not saying you should always go for it, but you're in a spot where you're on your own 35. I know it's risky, but chance to keep the drive going. And later in the game, you had a 4th down that you elected to punt on. And I think that one was, 4th and 9 when you were at the 15-yard line. 4th and 9 gets to be a little thick, and you got the 3 points there. But I just wonder about Shanahan and his reluctance to be aggressive at times.
All right, how does this grab you? Because Steve Kerr is going to join us in 3 minutes, and we will play this for him and get his reaction. Listen to Draymond Green, and this is from his podcast, Draymond Green Show, last week, talking about that time in Boston a couple of weeks ago that Steve Kerr got hot at Steph Curry, which we don't see very much. Listen to Draymond talk it out.
I'm immediately watching that and I see it. And I'm watching Steph's reaction and how he responds to it. Because if he responds negatively, I've already told myself, like, I need to go talk to Coach and make sure Coach understand the reaction. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. To make sure Coach understand, hey, Steph ain't respond great to you yelling at him like that.
Yeah.
Let's just keep an eye on that. So that's already my mindset. You have to know what make your guys tick and what makes and what makes them not. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I'm watching that like a hawk. In turn, I'm then watching the post-game press conferences. And Steph like, nah, I want to be coached like everybody else. That statement lines up with the way you continue to play after you and Steve had your moment. I wash my hands, and I'm on to the next thing.
Okay, how's that grab you?
Yeah, make sure we keep an eye on that is what kind of cracked me up. Like,
why does it crack you up?
It cracks me up like, so Draymond wants to go over to see Steve and kind of let Steve know, hey, we need to kind of watch that. We don't bark at Steph like that. That's kind of what I was hearing Draymond say. And then when he realizes that Steph, you know, took it and wanted to take it in that way, it's like, okay, everything's all right.
Yeah, I think what he's saying is, like, I wanted to see how Steph would handle it. And obviously Steph handled it very, very well. And they went out and they finished that game in Boston very strong, and they won the basketball game and all of that. I know how this makes some people feel. There are a lot of people listening to us right now who, when Draymond Green talks about leadership and talks about what his guys need and how they need it and all that, you get very upset right away. Because it's like, that coming from you, Mr. Hothead? And I understand that. I know Draymond has had some very high-profile bad moments, but everyone with the Warriors organization has been pretty clear for years now in stating that that Draymond Green is an absolutely key force, not only on the court but off, in terms of leadership. I kind of accept what he's saying here with regard to, like, we don't see that very often, so keep an eye on it. See what happens next. And what happened next was really good.
I accept it, but it's just kind of funny to me that a player is going to go to the coach and say, hey, we may need to watch that, the way you bark at another player. It's not because it's coming from him. It's just the way, like, and he used the we. Like, we need to keep an eye on that.
Well,
like,
they're all a group, right?
Right, I mean, he has more gravitas than, I don't think that Lindy Waters would go up to Steve and say, Steve, I'm going to need you to not bark at Steph like that.
Was it not Moses Moody and GP2 who were trying to, like, kind of protect Steve when he was mad at the refs on Friday night against Memphis?
We should ask Steve about that time we get him.
How about now? You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer.